Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Upside Swings NBA Draft Podcast, the podcast of the highest ceiling. I'm your host, Bryce Hedricks, joined as always by the great Stone Hansen and the wonderful Cooper Klein. And we're here to finish up the G League in what should be a pretty quick podcast, but we also do kind of want to give a post-mortem on the great Ignite experiment. So we're going to talk about a couple guys. It'll end up being three guys, but they'll all be pretty brief. I might give some also brief thoughts on T.R. Darlin just to do it. You know, not a ton to say on guys other than the first guy who I think will have a solid amount to say maybe. But before we jump too far into it, Coop, Stone, my friends, how you guys doing?
All right. I'm getting this energy down to more on this one. So I'm doing better. It's been pretty long week, but a good week. And I think that this is a good way for me to top it off talking G League.
Yeah. These guys, I mean, we'll see. This might be I don't want to jinx it, but this might be the briefest Upside Swings deep dive pod ever. If you just look at the deep dive part, just a lot of pretty simple, basic guys with not a ton of complexity, but I'm really excited to talk about them and talk about what we think they could be here at the next level.
Absolutely, and I hope you guys can't hear too much of my dog playing with her toys. My fiance is out of town, and my dog is just will not stop bugging me. So if there's slight background noise throughout, I will do my best in the editing process to cut out the annoying chunks, but we'll see how that goes. But let's start here with I would say the last really interesting guy who, you know, we considered putting in the last podcast, but we thought let's save him and that way he can be the headliner of the next podcast. And that's Tyler Smith of the G League Ignite. Tyler Smith is listed at 6'11". Coop, how tall do you think Tyler Smith actually is?
He's like max 6'9". Like he is not, I'd say he's a tall 6'8" or a short 6'9". He's really big. He's a bulky dude, strong, built guy. And I think the G League is also trying to kind of boost their guys and kind of boost their stock however they can. And if Tyler is legitimately 6'11", that does make him a more interesting prospect, but I just don't.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm with you. He's probably 6'8", 6'9", or so. He looks smaller than Matas Buzelis, so however tall Buzelis is. He's somewhere in between Buzelis and Ron Holland. I'm with you that he's, you know, he's pretty strong. He looks pretty long. You know, it wouldn't surprise me if he had a 7-foot wingspan, you know, and his explosiveness does make up a little bit for some other things. We'll get into that. In his sole season for the GLI, he averaged 22 minutes a game, put up 13 points on 48.1, 36.4, 72.5 shooting splits, grabbed, 5.1 boards, 1.1 assist, a block, about one turnover, give or take, had a 62.9% true shooting. The only efficient player on this entire G League Ignite team, other than, I mean, Almonso is kind of efficient, but Tyler Smith is another level of efficient above him, if I'm remembering correctly. 7.6% offensive rebound rate, 18.4% defensive rebound rate, pretty solid. 8.8% assist rate to a 10% turnover rate. Neither of those numbers are very good. 1.6 steal, 4% block, 23.9 usage. All that sort of suggests play finishing big. So that's where I want to start. Stone, will you walk us through Tyler Smith's play finishing, however you want to take that?
I'd say that he's a play finisher as out of necessity more so than out of role that he's put into. Because I think that he's not a very complex reader of the game on either end, and we can get more into it defensively too later on, but I just don't think he like reads much beyond what's right in front of him, and that happens to be okay if you are the fifth option on the floor for your team offensively, which I think is the best role for him, especially going into the NBA, because you're betting on the shooting, I think, with him. If you're drafting Tyler Smith in that top 20-ish type range, I think you have to do it because you're betting on him finishing efficiently enough as a three-point shooter when he gets the ball. And interior-wise, he can roll okay. I think that he's almost like 100% of the time looking to finish at the rim if he gets the ball as a roller, rather than looking at what the next move is that he can make. He's just going to try and finish up at the rim almost all of the time. It feels like that he actually has decent footwork, I felt like, inside. Not great, but not bad, I would say. It wasn't like a huge significant drawback for me in that area. The touch, I think, is very inconsistent. I didn't have a great read on it, so I'm interested to hear your guys' thoughts on it. And I think that is important when you're talking about Smith, especially if you view him in the way that I do, that he is, I think, going to be this play finisher at the next level. And if that's basically all that your role is and you're not expanding a whole lot more outside of that, I feel like the touch is going to have to be really good. And I just didn't come away thinking that with Smith.
Yeah, you know, I'm with you. I think there's two aspects to really focus on with the play finishing. One is the athleticism as a roll man, or cutter, or offensive rebound guy. I liked his offensive rebounding. And one is the shot. So I'll start with the shot. You know, right now, the shot prep is pretty bad. He's rarely catching ready to shoot. You know, he doesn't really look like a super comfortable shooter all the time. But he still shot 36.4% on nearly four attempts a game. 72.5% from the free throw line isn't great. But, you know, I think there's a world he's like a really high level shooter in the NBA. Like not a guarantee that he's going to get there, but I think there's a path. I really like the jumper mechanics. I think it's super, you know, it's a two motion type shot, 1.5 motion maybe, where his body moves pretty independent of his arms. But he gets, I mean, great extension, right? You can tell he kind of grew up watching like Carmelo Anthony. He loves those little face up mid-range jumpers, right? But it works from three too, where he's consistently just rising over contests. He kind of gets away with shooting sort of a flat arc because he's so high and the way the release comes out of his hand. I don't know that there's a ton of movement equity with it. He really has to learn how to catch and be bent and ready to shoot. He's super upright in everything he does, but even as a shooter. But like, I buy the combination of mechanics and the number, again, small sample size from a single season, but the numbers this season, when you consider how many little things were wrong that could be tweaked, give me a lot of hope that, like, you know, down the line, there's a world he's like a 40% catch and shoot guy, you know, like, you know, not that that's great, but, you know, like I think there's a real world where that happens. Coop, can you walk me through the rim finishing? I'm guessing you probably had a similar feel for the offensive rebounding I did. Just how'd you feel about him as a guy at the rim?
He really struggled with anything that wasn't just like a dunk at the rim, especially for a guy who's like 6'9" and strong. Like, he's strong. He's able to get in there. And if it's not like a strength finish or he's slamming the ball in on a dunk attempt, those rim finishes were just, I mean, he could get in there and like try and tap some, you know, offensive rebounds back in, but his touch just isn't good enough to consistently be a guy who's doing that, who's crashing the boards as like a closeout attacker, which he didn't get to do very often, but as like a guy who's attacking, you know, an advantage, he's just not a good enough finisher on layups, and you're not very often going to get like a full, you know, slam opportunity with his lack of athleticism. Like, he's not an unathletic guy, but he's not a good enough athlete to consistently be getting, you know, dunk attempts off of a closeout. And he's not a good enough ball handler to be able to, you know, create those opportunities for himself. He really relies on those stupid little two dribble pull-ups into the mid-range that piss me off. And he's, you know, he's got some game where if he's hot, you can give him the ball and okay, you know what? will give you a shot creation attempt where you get to do it. And he can hit him. He can hit him every once in a while, but he's not like the kind of guy who's going to be trusted to do this very often. And I just don't know if he's athletic enough to be a wing in the NBA. He's not a good enough ball handler. He's not a good enough athlete or a good enough finisher to be a wing. And at 6'9", if you have to be a big, it's especially one who's not a good finisher, it's kind of a tough ask. And he'd kind of have to make up for that with some kind of defensive versatility. And I don't want to spoil it, but I don't think he's a good enough defender. He's not good enough in that area to make up for, you know, a lot of the smaller mistakes in his surrounding offense that's not with the shooting.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. You know what? Something I noticed is there's just no bend there. He's really inflexible in his hips, in his core. Like he can't extend his strides well either. He's at his best as a screen and roll or pop guy, and now that's great. But it's hard if you're not a five. And like you said, we're gonna save the defense, but he's definitely not a five defensively. He can't be the primary rim protector in drop coverage. So, you know, he is sort of pigeonholed, but, you know, I do think there's a path here as just a high level shooter at 6'9" or so, who's athletic enough as like a cutter and roll guy. I really liked his offensive. I'm with Stone where I don't think he's great at reading things with any type of complexity, but I think he is good at reading space and angles as a cutter, and then at more specifically as an offensive rebounder. I think he does a really good job identifying when he can crash from the perimeter and how to crash in order to get his hands on the ball, and taking good angles to where he already beats a guy downhill as they've turned their head, where they can't bump him off his line with a, you know, with a closeout, or not a closeout, a box out. He can just really get to, and then, you know, he's had some pretty impressive you know, put back dunks and stuff. But even if he's not getting dunks, just going and getting the ball, you know, I'm with you where there's just not a ton there as a finisher other than the dunks, though. He's not crafty at the rim. He can't bend around bigger defenders and beat them off the dribble. I do think there's a world where if teams switch everything, you could get, like, if he was on a defense, like a heavy defense team, you could get something out of just, hey, every once in a while, we just need to throw him the ball and let him take this face-up mid-range shot over a 6'1 defender. Like, he is good at that. That is a very marginal value play, but he can do that. You know, Stone, am I missing that? Is there any creation equity here with Tyler Smith? Or, you know, more broadly, what do you think his role looks like at the next level offensively?
Yeah, I absolutely do not see any sort of creation equity with him at all. I think I don't think he can do anything with the ball outside of score. And that's not necessarily, you know, an indictment on him. That's just who the type of player that he is. I don't think he's, I can get into the passing a little bit. I think he's a kind of a bad passer, to be honest. I think a lot of it comes down to the fact that he doesn't really, the reason he can't do much with the ball, and the reason I think he's not a very good passer, is that he just, I feel like, lacks a lot of reactivity in seeing how the defenses react to things in order to change how he continues what he's going to do with the ball. I think that it's not necessarily a thing of like he's overly premeditated with everything. I think he just doesn't have a great feel of how to react towards how defenses react, and I think that very much limits him. Apart from, he's just, I mean, we've talked about, it seems like we're pretty much on agreement, he has to be a four in the NBA, and you're not expecting much of those guys to handle the ball a whole lot. But I don't think he really even has enough handle to do like a lot with like straight line drives or anything. I feel like it's pretty much most of his buckets are going to be assisted, it feels like. With the shooting, I don't think I'm as confident in Bryce that the shooting's going to pan out. I think it's definitely plausible, but I don't think it's I don't feel as strongly about it as I did with some with guys like Ron and Matas. And I think that he's going to be, I think, really relegated to being the fifth option in pretty much most of the lineups he's going to be in, offensively speaking, because I just don't think he does much with the ball. And, you know, if he doesn't have great touch around the rim, he's I don't feel super confident about the three-point shooting. And as a roller, he's adequate, I would say, as a scorer, but beyond that, there's not much creativity at the rim, like Bryce mentioned. So it just feels like he's very subpar at the simplistic things that he probably has to be really good at to be able to succeed with this sort of skill set. And it's difficult for me to buy that as highly as some may.
No, I think that's definitely fair. I think for me, the one thing, I'm definitely higher on the shot than you, Stone, and Coop, I'll get your take on this in a second. But, you know, I do think there's a world he's a high-level shooter, and I do think that's something worth betting on with a 6'9 guy. Just, I think this we're recording this on the first night of the playoffs after the play-in games. I think we've kind of seen the importance of having a a real big shooter sometimes. That's just a matchup problem for teams. Coop, how do you feel? You know, are you closer to Stone or closer to me in terms of the shooting and overall offensive role slash upside?
I think I'm closer to you, Bryce, just as far as the shot is solid right now as a very young player playing in a professional league. Was actually able to be efficient even as a jump shooter while playing how many games he played. I should have that. He played 45 games and was able to maintain, good efficiency, basically knocked down almost 50% of his unguarded catch and shoots, which is a tiny sample size. But every single time he got even a semi open jumper, it was just right in. Straight money. He's not going to get a ton of those in the NBA, but I think his mechanics and just being able to be semi-efficient at a young age is enough to buy. I think he has a lot of potential as a pick and pop guy, which with some kind of motion shooters and guys who can come off of pin downs, DHOs could be really fun because he's not going to turn the ball over a ton. And if you have to guard him as well, and he can pop wide off of a handoff, there's a lot of, I wouldn't say there's a lot of potential there for him to be like a dangerous threat, but there's a few plays that are kind of in vogue in the modern NBA that he could really thrive with. And just being really tall and strong and really, really shooty is enough to be, worth a bet when there's a lot of guys who don't hit any of those criteria and are taken in the first round. It's kind of simple, but I don't have the shooting breakdown of you guys, but it's a role that we kind of joke about a lot, like 3-and-D guy. But if you're actually this tall and can actually shoot, I mean, go for it.
Yeah. I mean, Nikola Batum was just the best player on a team that won a postseason game. I mean, you can say what you want. I mean, it's kind of silly, but it's also true. Like at a certain point, what the NBA is built around right now is having two to three guys who are the gravity wells of your offense, and just trying to find two guys who can make shots and slash or defend next to them. Like that's NBA basketball right now. I really believe in the shot, to be honest. And he's young. I should have mentioned this at the top, but I didn't. He's a November 2nd, 2004 birthday. So he turned 19. He will turn 20 at the beginning of his rookie season. So not super young, I guess. That's my fault. But at the beginning of his rookie season, he'll turn 20. And to me, like that, like Coop said, that production at a pro level, I think people don't realize how hard it is to step from the high school three-point line immediately to the NBA three-point line. I'm a college coach right now, and I've seen guys, good shooters really struggle with that step from the high school three-point line to the college three-point line at an extra 2.5 feet. That's tough. And for him to do it as efficiently as he did, again, with missing the shot prep. Like, the shot prep was inarguably really bad last year. And he was still making shots at a fairly solid rate. Not like incredibly high volume, but volume enough. I just think there's a lot there with the shot long term. And, you know, again, just being not a slouch of an athlete, it matters there, right? He's not a great burst athlete guy, but, you know, you could probably stick with the dunker spot. He'll sneak for a couple, you know, big putbacks. Like, again, that's the type of stuff that matters. But for him to really be a worthwhile, you know, first round type guy, it would probably require some real defensive upside. So, Stone, do you want to walk us through how you felt about Tyler Smith defensively?
Yeah, I just the final note I had offensively real quick was I think as a shooter, I really noticed a difference of when he's got his feet planted as opposed to when he hops into shots. Like, it feels like the efficiency drops a ton when he's like hop stepping, which he seemed to do like overly frequent for how inefficient it was for him. So I don't think he's an overly versatile shooter, but I mean, I'm not discrediting the fact that he could be a really good catch and shoot guy. I just don't have the same level of confidence in that. But yeah, to move on to the defense, the 3-and-D aspect, I agree with you guys. If you're a rangy 6'9" guy who can catch and shoot and bring something defensively, I think is worth a fairly high pick. And I think I haven't been around enough conversations to know if this is even a thing, but I would imagine people are comparing him and maybe Taylor Hendricks in terms of similarities of role they may produce in the NBA. Again, I don't know if that's really a thing, and I'm not necessarily making that comparison, but I would say that the biggest difference for me there is defensively, I have a really tough time buying confidently what Tyler Smith brings to me. I've watched maybe 25 going up. Yeah, maybe 25 guys in this class. And I think Smith probably has the slowest hips that I've seen out of anyone. I think it really limits him on the perimeter as a defender, which concerns me quite a bit because I don't think he's a very good rim protector either. So not being able to do either of those things is somewhat concerning to me. I think that he moves his feet well for whatever that's worth, but if someone's just able to get around you quickly enough and you can't move your hips well enough, that kind of gets mitigated rather quickly. I think that it feels like he's limited as well as a help defender because of the fact that I mentioned earlier, he really struggles to sort of make secondary reads. And I think that comes into play defensively when he's a help defender, where I think he really struggles to understand the impact of where he positions himself as a help defender, changes the dynamic of where opposing offenses are on the court and how he can react towards getting back to them. And because his hips are rather slow, it does limit how quickly he can recover back to his man if he is a help guy. So I think right off the bat, I'm very skeptical of him on the perimeter as a defender and as a help guy. And at the rim, I'll let you guys cover it more, but I wasn't overly impressed with at the rim stuff. I think if he's there with his man and his man is more of a dunker spot relegated guy, that he can be effective. But if he's more of like a low man rotation guy who has to sort of keep an eye of where the ball is and his man simultaneously, I think it gets difficult for him and he's not able to make those reads as effectively. So I'm rather skeptical of what he brings defensively, but maybe you guys can help change my mind there.
I'm not going to really be able to change your mind. He has some strengths. He's a fine, like, straight line driver defender. I don't think his foot speed is like awful for a guy who's 6'9", but again, the hips can't flip. So anytime there's any kind of move put on him, it's wraps. Like you said, he's fine in tight spaces when his man's already down there in the paint, and he's fine at contesting. And I think he's an okay defensive rebounder. He's a much better offensive rebounder from my read on things. And maybe part of that is just like playing next to guys like Ron and Almanza, who are just like dominant defensive rebounders. but he definitely had less of a feel on the defensive end as a rebounder to me. But he's just not good at any kind of defense that isn't run in a straight line, slide in a straight line, do anything in a straight line. And it, as a 6'9 guy, I think you can get away with that to some degree, because there's not very many guys that he's going to be guarding in the NBA that can change direction super quickly. But if he's going up against any 6'9 guy with a semblance of a handle, it's just wraps. It's money. Jairus Walker is getting, you know, 40 feet clean blowbys on this guy, you know, 10 times a night if they end up matching up, something like that. It's just really a worry for a guy who, you know, we there are question marks with the shot, you know, there are question marks with the rest of the game surrounding his shot. And there's a lot of question marks for a guy who is so simple and who should be able to just come in and do a few things well. There's just so many question marks, and he doesn't help address any of those on the defensive end.
Yeah, I mean, if I trusted that Tyler Smith was going to be a good defensive player, he'd probably be a surefire first round guy for me. But I just have so many questions. You know, I do think he is. I'm higher on the defensive rebounding than you, Coop. He's not like a great box out guy, but the G League isn't a great box out league. But he can sky for. I think he has really good hands. I didn't mention this offensively, but like he makes contested catches consistently. Like quite a few of like the alley oops he caught were with dudes like right next to him, and he still, you know, he goes up with two hands, grabs it strong. You know, I like that he doesn't try to do too much too. He's not a guy like he doesn't grab rebound and try to grab and go usually. He's like, okay, where's Ron Holland? Where's London Johnson? Let me get the ball out. Like, you know. Sometimes you, this is good. This is a bit of a tangent, but sometimes you see a guy takes a ton of mid-range shots, you know, play to OTE. You kind of, you know, playing in G League at night instead of going the old school college route. And like, you know, you might assume a little bit of ego there, right? I don't see that on the floor at all. I think he accepts his role and tries to play it. I think the biggest question for me is, and this is something I'm interested to track. I probably should have spent more time paying attention to this in the past. How good are NBA teams at teaching someone to actually sit in the stands? Because he's so the reason his hips are so slow is because he's so upright. It's like turning around, you know, around a 747. You know, it's like you got to take a lot, like a huge long path to do it because he's just so like he's so upright. He can't quickly drop step to get his hips down. He can't turn and sprint to get back in front. He has to turn all the way around and then bend to sprint. It's a whole process for him. So I'm with Coop where like, I actually think the foot speed is good. Or maybe it was someone that said this. I think the foot speed is actually good. Like I think like he has moments where he's pushing hard in a straight line. You're like, oh man, it looks like he can stay in front of someone. But then once they get the slightest bit of that hip, which NBA drivers are just going to do, they do it on the best defenders. It's a problem. So I'm really worried about him guarding on the perimeter. Though I do like his strength. Like, you know, like he's not a guy who like, you know, 40-year-old LeBron is going to be able to go after, right? Because like I think he can guard in the post. And that's important. You know, it's becoming more and more important. Now can he guard Joel Embiid in the post? Probably not, but he can guard some in the post, and that's important. You know, the rim protection stuff, I'm with Stone. When he's right at the rim, it looks fine. But when he has to actually rotate, it's pretty bad. And he's not a huge load leaper offensively, but when he's trying to time up and aim blocks, I do think he takes a little bit to load because he has to do, even on offense, every explosive 2-foot leap is a hop into it. He doesn't left, right, or right, left into his 2-foot leaps. He has to hop. So when you're doing that offensively to catch a lob, it's okay. I'm sprinting, hop, and get up. And you kind of know, hey, the ball just has to be, you kind of have to do, you know, you just have to, you can just get anywhere close to the ball to throw it down. But defensively, you're trying to get to such a specific spot that he's trying to aim himself up more, and it just takes more time. So, you know, I don't think he's great there. I'm wondering, you know, if the path for him is just be survivable defensively, be such a good shooter at 6'9", that's, you know, it, like, he's a better defensive player than, like, Matthew Hurt, right? Like, you know, if he can be a similar level of shooter to someone like a Matthew Hurt and just be more survivable defensively, you're talking about a valuable NBA player. But the question is, how good can he get? And there's potential there, again, with the foot speed, with the strength. It's just about, hey, can you get him to make the simple reads better? I think he's a pretty bad ground coverage guy, so he has to be really good at making simple low man reads. And can you get him to sit in a stance more consistently? Those are kind of the questions. So that's what we're looking at. Stone, I know you said you had a little bit more to say on the defense, specifically about the rim protection stuff. That, you know, do you still have some stuff to add there?
I don't think so. Or at least I don't remember saying that. I might have, but if I did, I apologize, because I don't think I have anything left to say.
He's kind of mid, and that's kind of a worry. But he is 6'9" and mid. Like, at the very, it's a lot easier to be 6'9" and mid than it is to be 6'4" and mid, and like be physically gifted and strong and
pretty young.
Yeah, and pretty young. It's a. It's still a tough sell for a guy who is only a shooter, but he has, you know, a lot of things going for him.
Let's talk about value here. And Lord knows we've already talked 31 minutes on Tyler Smith. I'm sure that's more than most people spend, but his value is interesting to me. So I'm going to end up with him as a guy who, you know, if I was getting him in the second round, I'd be really happy, like really happy. But I'd probably take him in the first round. In this class, he's almost certainly going to end up as a first round pick. I actually have him above Nikola Topic, which is, you know, I don't know if that's really a hot take or not, to be honest. He's really close to, so that tier above him is like Ihsan Almansa, Zachary Wisache, and Ron Holland. Like, he's close to that. And I actually think he has a higher floor potentially if he is making shots than all those guys. Like, his median outcome is probably higher, in my opinion, than Ron Holland, Ihsan Almansa, or Zachary Wisache's median outcome. And, you know, the more I think about it, the more I might even prefer him to Wisache especially. But I just can't get to, hey, this is a clear first rounder in any draft, which is, you know, I try to make my board, you know, as historically retroactive as possible. And I just think he's more in line with the type of guy I'd rather take in the high 30s than the, you know, the mid 20s, if that makes sense. So Stone, where are you at with Tyler Smith value wise?
Yeah, so I mean, it comes down to, this guy is defensively, I don't buy a whole lot with him other than simplistic stuff, which doesn't necessarily, I want to be clear that doesn't necessarily make you a worse player, but, or take away inherent value from who you are as a player. But it does mean that, I mean, that you have to be in more specific contexts to be able to fit you into simplistic things. It means it limits the amount of complexity you can handle on either end, really. And because of that, it's going to limit, you know, how many ways you can be successful, because you're limited to coaching scheme and who can play around you. And because of that, you're now narrowing the pathways towards success. So it doesn't necessarily mean you're worse. It just means it's not as easy to do. If that makes any sort of sense. I feel like that was long-winded, but so all that to say, I have him 13th on my board, which is probably going to surprise a lot of people, because it sounds like I was pretty negative, I feel like, throughout this segment. But I don't want to jump too far ahead, because I think I've watched more guys up to this point than you guys, or at least have been talked about on the pod. Everyone that's been talked about on this podcast before Tyler Smith, I have at least one tier above him. And having him 13th out of 22 players that I've ranked so far is more of an indictment of the people that are behind him rather than how high I am on Tyler Smith. like you guys are saying, he's a pseudo big who can shoot, and that has value. But I'm not very confident defensively that he provides much value. And I think that the shooting is good, but I'm not confident in it being very good at the next level. So it's a bet worth taking in this class especially. But in most classes, I think he'd wind up being somebody I'd take in the low 30s or early 40s. But this class to me is just that. I mean, to be blunt, bad, that I'll probably end up having him top 20 when it's all said and done.
For me, this is kind of a question of what's the value of a backup forward. I think he kind of perfectly profiles as this shooter. You can bring him in off the bench, you know, because you don't want him in with the starters getting cooked by Jason Tatum and Paolo Banchero on a nightly basis, because I just don't think there's a world where he's a good enough defender to stop starting level forwards. So he profiles as a backup, and it as like a youngish guy who isn't super high feel, not a crazy athlete, not like a world ending shooter. He's a good shooter for a 19 and a half year old. It's kind of a tough sell as like a one way player, but I think taking the swing on a guy who is so young, who at least produced and you know he can do some things in a pro-ish scheme at such a young age, as if you can bring him in and get him to be your backup, is that worth a first round pick? Most years I would say no. So I think I'm going to have him as a priority second rounder, like in my tiers that I do of guys, but he's going to be behind Zach Rizzi. That's his new official nickname. I'm not pronouncing his name ever again. And I do have him above Topic, mainly because I still don't fully understand how to value what Topic does.
Yeah, I want to make a quick amendment. Topic is the only guy I have below him that was talked about on this pod previously.
Excellent hater energy, Stone. We love to hear it.
No, that's all fair. I'll wait to talk about the specifics of my big board until we get there eventually. Eventually we will. While we're not going to do the 30 for 30 this year, we're still going to do a big board pod with the three of us and a mock draft pod when the time comes. Let's move on to someone who we're going to change the structure how we're going to do this, because one of us likes this guy and the other two thinks he stinks. So Coop, why don't you tell us, I'll introduce him, and then I'm just going to give you the floor to tell us why we should be talking about Babacar Sané. Because spoiler alert, but Stone and I are very out, just about as out as you could be. Babacar is a September 19th, 2003 birthday. He'll turn 21 before the start of his first NBA season, so it's not like he's super young. He is from Senegal. I'm always going to root for guys from Africa. It's a thing for me. African kids and JUCO kids are always going to get seal of hope. So, you know, I hope nothing but the best for him. Listed at 6'7", 230. He's probably more like 6'5", maybe 6'6". Fairly long arms, probably a 6'9"-ish wingspan. But no, he's not 6'7". And he's played two seasons for the Ignite. This last season, in 23 games, he averaged 10.1 or basically 11 points on 45.4, 25.6, 68.5 shooting splits. Did not get to the line very much. 5.8 rebounds, 0.5 assists, 0.5 steals, 0.5 blocks, 1.7 turnovers. Triple the number of turnovers per game as blocks, steals, and assists. Pretty rough. He had a 57.9% true shooting this year, which is not bad by any means. 48.2% effective field goal. Not great, but not horrible. 22.5 defensive rebound. That's probably his most exciting advanced stat. 7.2 offensive rebound. A 3.7 assist rate is like historically awful. Like, very few players have ever touched the NBA floor with worst assist rates. Now, sadly, he's not in Bartorvik, which would be great if he was, but you know, if we could compare it that way, it'd probably be pretty bad. 15.2% turnover rate, 1.2 steal, 1.9 block, 22.2 usage. Coop, why are we talking about Barbara Arsane?
Because he's strong and he grabs a lot of rebounds. And every game or so, he'll have a play or two where you go, oh my God, was that Babacar Sané? And you just go insane and you're like, this was the greatest play I've ever seen in my life. Hits, you know, he can hit an open three here and there. Decent finisher. I think the only thing he's like actually good at other than rebounding is transition play, where I think he has a good feel for like leaking out and, you know, getting out there and you know, making open layups and dunks and things of that ilk. I'll leave the negative stuff to you guys, but I admittedly have an addiction to 6'5 players who throw down cool dunks and grab a lot of rebounds. It's an issue. It's an issue. I'll fully admit it. But that is why today we're talking about Babacar Sané.
I'm gonna let Stone do all the negatives because I do wanna concur that he is a great rebounder and he's a great motor guy in general. And there might be a path for him as a pure motor guy. Like nothing else, just, hey, we're going to put this guy in to steal us 6 minutes because our starters are playing like ass and they're yelling at each other. So we're going to put this guy in and hopefully he just smacks some motherfuckers around and he gets some rebounds. The tough thing is so many guys who succeed in the league in that role are so much better than Babacar in the things that aren't really a part of that role necessarily, but do sort of matter in that, like, generally, like, you think of guys who do that, they generally don't have 3% assist rates, but he does. I mean, he's a great rebounder. He has really good hands. He needs a huge huge runway to explode. But when he does, I mean, off 1 foot especially, like he can throw down some pretty thunderous dunks. But he's a bad rim protector. He's super gambly defensively. Doesn't have a ton of like discipline defensively, which none of the guys in G League Ignite do. That's something we probably should. Other than Bouzelis, I'm not sure any of the guys are particularly disciplined defensively. The G League is a horrible place to teach defensive discipline. Even Matas isn't really that disciplined, especially on closeouts. He's just in the right spot sometimes, but he's bad there. I don't know. It's just I want to like Babacar, but again, I just don't think there's actually really anything there. Stone, do you even want to get into the bad, or you know, was my fake praise enough that we should just maybe move on to where we have him?
Well, I will say, last year I didn't like Babacar at all. I just didn't see any pathway at all. This year I actually thought he improved significantly, even if the counting stats don't necessarily show that, if just based on film. But I still don't see any realm of NBA player in him. I think it can maybe cut it as like an overseas guy, which isn't, you know, a bad thing necessarily, but I just don't see NBA to him.
He's built for the German A-League. I can't explain it, but he is absolutely built for the German A-League.
I'd love to see him in the Serbian League just bully guys because he is so strong. Like he I don't want to downplay that. Like he's an extremely strong player. This dude is built. He's like a tank. People are going to blow this way out of proportion, so I probably shouldn't even say it, but he almost has like a Zion light build. Not to say that he has the same athleticism as Zion by any means, but just purely looking at them, like it he has that level of compact tank in him. He's extremely physical. I think this year he did a much better job of using that physicality than he did last year. That said, you're not betting on him to really shoot. He can hit an occasional spot up, but it's just that, an occasional spot up. I don't really, even Cooper, I would guess, doesn't see much beyond that, and he's the biggest fan of him.
Stone, you know who he reminds, not to interrupt, but this complete flow of consciousness, you know who he reminds me of is non-Nepo Thanasis Antetokounmpo. That's like, because like, oh, people, man, forget Thanasis was like a good
people player. Forget like, Thanasis is a bucket.
He was a good player, and he was a legitimate NBA prospect outside of his relation to Giannis. Now he's just Giannis's brother who's on the because Giannis is on the, and like, listen, I whatever, like, I don't care. Good for Giannis to get his family fed as far as I'm concerned. But like, you know, like, there's a little bit of, if I went back and watched old Thanasis film, I probably would have said, hey, this is a guy I would have drafted. He's kind of like a worse version of that. Now, take that for what you will. Thanasis is also like 30 now or whatever. Like, I mean, he's not really an NBA player anymore. He arguably never really was. But there was a time where legitimately you could have argued Thanasis at least deserves real looks at the NBA. And Sané is like a step below that. So for whatever that's what I'm going to root for him. I as we move into value stuff, I would keep him in. I would take him on my summer league team, and I'd keep him in the G League just as a, hey, he seems like he's a great teammate. He's always hyped for his boys. He plays his ass off. He's the type of guy who, if the G League does start to restructure to put competitive basketball more towards the forefront, would be great for your developmental young guys who are playing in the G League to like have as a teammate, I think. But there's just no NBA equity there. And that makes me sad. But I think it's just kind of the truth of it. Coop Stone, do you guys want to give where you have him ranked, or should we just move on?
I have him ranked last, 22 out of 22 of the guys that I've watched. I do want to just like hit bullet points really quickly as to why I have him low. I don't want to just say him low, but not explain why. I'll be really quick though. I think he has very poor feel on both ends. That's the main driver of that, as evidenced by a lot of the passing numbers. I just think he's a really bad passer in general. Defensively, I think he's really bad off ball, like extremely bad. And I think that that's, even in the G League context, it pops, which is not a good thing. I think he does slide his feet well defensively, but it doesn't really matter because the angles he gives drivers defensively, it's just like an open lane to the rim, despite how good he can move his feet alongside them. I think he doesn't have a very good timing of like when to pick the ball up on drives, et cetera, et cetera. So essentially, I'm trying to just explain that basically every aspect of his game is affected by negative feel. And that's pretty much why I'm as low as I am on him.
This is like when, this is what I felt like when I was fighting for my life 2 years ago for Aminu Mohammed on the pod. just like energy, rebounding, and vibes. And that's why you want Babacar. I would love to have him on my summer league team. I think he's the kind of guy who goes into, like, really can like just kick ass in the G League, in a league that's just dominated by transition play and energy. And I think he can be a guy in the G League. I would love to see him in the NBA, obviously. I don't know if he has the skills, but I hope the best for him. I really love his game, and that's why I forced us to talk about him, even if we're mostly negative. We're all fans of Babacar. And I can't wait to see him at Summer League, because I know he's going to be there, and it's going to be awesome.
Absolutely. All right, let's move on to the last thing, the last guy we're going to talk about here, and that's London Johnson. Now, London is sixth. He's listed at 6'3", 181 pounds. He's a June 6th, 2004 birthday. He's 19. He'll turn 20 right before the draft. He's another two-year G League Ignite guy. So he averaged 10.6 points per game this year on 43, 31.9, 80.5 splits. Grabbed 2.2 rebounds, 4.9 assists to only 2.2 turnovers, really good. 0.6 steals, 0.4 blocks. Had a 55.4 true shooting, 48.2 effective field goal, 6.1 defensive rebound rate. 31% assist rate, good. We'll talk about the caveats with that in a little bit. 18.7% turnover rate, also good. But again, we're going to get there. 1.2 steal rate, not very good. 1.4 block rate for a guard, not bad. In the G League, 20.3 usage. Stone, I'm going to throw this to you. If London's going to survive in the league, he's going to be a really high-level playmaker. How did you feel about his playmaking?
I felt good that he can collapse defenses to create those opportunities. I don't feel like he's the most efficient passer. And that worries me a little bit. I think he does well to get himself in the lane to draw extra help. I think he makes the right reads a good amount of time, but not a great amount of time, which is what you want out of someone if you want any sort of like starting equity. And I think he is just the way I really think is the best to encapsulate him as a prospect is that he's just very erratic. And I think that that applies to multiple facets of his game. And I think that that was more intriguing to me when he was younger last year, but now that he's a year older and still has a lot of that still within his game, it somewhat concerns me a bit. And I think that in order for him to be a really high level playmaker, he has the aspect of being able to get himself in positions that he can collapse defenses, but he has to improve the accuracy of passes. I think he's going to have to improve where to lead his guys, which is not the best context in Ignite to do that. So part of it might have been the context, part of it might just be him. But I think that he's just very, he's quite the roller coaster in a lot of ways. I don't know. There's a lot of flashes. That's just really what it is with him. It's flashes. And when there's flashes without consistency at age 20, it becomes more concerning than it is when you're 18 or 19.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely fair. You know, as far as his playmaking goes, I think there's good and bad. The number is a bit misleading because of how much of it is just again, G League defense is just so bad. It's just like there's no other word for G League defense other than it's just really awful. Transition defense especially, so many of assists come from, well, he's just going to throw the ball ahead to Ron Holland and the other team isn't going to sprint back. So Ron Holland gets to do a cool dunk and he gets an assist, right? Or, really simple stuff. I do think he's a good, if he can get to his right hand, he's a really good athlete, good rim pressure guy. Really strong right-hand driver. He has some solid decel stuff, hesitation stuff, good bend to kind of get a hip and keep his line. But it's all right hand. Like, he can't go to his left at all, which is bad for like a, okay, he's listed at 6'3". He's probably 6 foot even, maybe 6'1". He's a good athlete, so like I get why they listed him bigger, but he's like 6'1". You know, there's times out there where you're watching him and you're like, oh, is this Scoot? Like, he is like similar to Scoot in that, hey, he's a great 1 foot athlete. He can get up off two sometimes too, which is kind of surprising. But it's always going towards that right hand. And if defenses really sit on that, he struggles a lot. When he goes to the left, he's almost always taking this kind of step back, leaning away mid-range shot, or he's trying to, really fight his way down. He's pretty skinny, you know, can't really use his strength super well to just like get an advantage going to his left. So he just ends up chopping wood to get, but if he can get to that right hand, like there's moments, you know, he's really good at collapsing the defense and at least trying to throw the ball out. Most of his really nice passes come in transition, where he's throwing the ball ahead. He had this one that was like a really nice kind of through pass. I think it was to Buzelis, where Buzelis was up ahead of the pack and he kind of threw it through two defenders and got it to him. There's some nice stuff there, but I wouldn't call him an elite passer, but he is maybe potentially an elite enough downhill driver that some of the passing stuff can come in. I don't think he's a high turnover guy, which is good. Like an 18% turnover rate for a guard in the G League who ran as much pick and roll as he did is pretty good. I do think he has some real pick and roll craft. Now, what he really wants to do in pick and roll is get to a spot before the big can roll and then cross the drop big over and hopefully force that big to guard him and then try and dump it off or just beat that big, right? And there's benefit to that. But NBA bigs, like, aren't as exploitable at the margins as what he was getting away with in the G League, right? Where if he hits that right to left cross, he's kind of going for this goofy foot layup off the glass against, I'm struggling to think of a Kyler Kelly from the Maine Celtics. He gets away with that sometimes. If that's Miles Turner, that shit's getting sent to the third row. So it's kind of a, you know, he's going to have to figure that out, which I mean, guards do, right? Guards take time. But the threshold is just so high for these 6 foot, 6 foot one, not super strong players. And the question is, you know, is he really reaching that? Coop, where are you at with Johnson as a playmaker? And then you want to transition us a little bit to his scoring as well.
So he has the flashes, like Stone talked about of like, that was a really cool pass. He like created a real advantage, made a decent pass, did something with the ball. His delivery is not great on these passes. He really struggles to like make these passes well and time them well and consistently. I think his big issue is just consistency. And then if you're not going to be like a primary advantage creator like that, then you're kind of leaning more towards backup point guard type reads where you're just like making the correct read over and over again and not turning the ball over and basically playing Monty Morris ball, where you're just trying to get the ball into the right spot, keep the offense moving. And I don't know if he's like particularly good at that either. Part of this is I have been burned before by specifically Dacian Nix and watching him basically tear up the G League statistically, had an incredible season, and it literally every single assist he made is just like G League rim protectors are not as good as NBA rim protectors, because if they were that level of player, they would be in the NBA right now because there's such a scarcity of NBA level rim protectors. And like there's every G League rim protector is either absurdly slow or absurdly small. There is not like a good rim protector in the G, and he really took advantage of that. And it's really hard to get a read on these guys in the G League as backup point guard prospects, because he dissected guys in transition. He's running these, you know, he's picking apart defenses that he's not going to see in the NBA. And it's a really hard read as a playmaker. The handle's kind of cool. He's got some shift. He's got some like legitimate fun, funky stuff going on. I wouldn't say he's like super slinky or super advanced, but there's some cool moments there with him as a ball handler. And it makes him a good isolation scorer. In my opinion, like he's a guy who you can give the ball to and he can create a shot. He's better in a mismatch where he doesn't have to do anything crazy. He's not, you know, playing guys his size, and he's pretty good at exploiting these bigger players and getting to spots that he likes to get to, and just reading, this is what I need to do. This is the spot I need to get to. I think he's good at that. The problem is he's not good at then leveraging that into playmaking attempts. There's flashes there for sure. He's not like, oh, I'm only going to score or I'm only going to pass here. There's moments where he's able to leverage it. But it's always a half step late. It's like, oh, my shot attempt is getting contested. Here's the dump off, which is fine. It works for him. I'm not sitting here saying it's like bad and he's like a bad playmaker, but it's a really tough combo for a guy who was like inefficient. You know, Synergy has him at 49.8% true shooting on the year. And that he's 20. Is that what you said up top? He is not super young. It's a really, really hard sell. And I really like him. I really like London Johnson's game. But it's a super hard sell to be an inefficient, you know, dissector of bad defense.
Yeah, no, that's all fair. For what it's worth, trust Coop's Synergy stats over the real GM stats. I was reading their larger sample size because they combine all G League Knights games. I was only reading off their official, just the G League games or whatever.
And the G League has like the three seasons thing.
Yeah,
like all that bullshit.
It's all obnoxious. But my Synergy sadly does not have G League stuff, so I had to watch the games elsewhere, and then I had to use real GM stats. That's besides the point. I don't think we need to talk a ton about the defense. He's not a good guard defender. He can create some steals, but you don't watch him and think, oh, this is Deuce McBride, where he's just going to get, you know. You also, like, I don't see Scoot, you know, something that I think maybe got lost a little bit in the Scoot evaluation and why I think, you know, I still believe in him strongly is that Scoot was like a really good off-ball defender. He leveraged his athleticism well, great nail defender. You know, I think last year, if I remember correctly, I compared him some to Kyle Lowry long-term. I still believe in that. That's not London Johnson. I mean, again, I don't think he's going to be a complete liability defensively. But I think what's more interesting is to talk about just, you know, the general tough thing with evaluating this position, the thresholds for guards are just so high. It's really hard to be below 6'4" and be a real NBA player. You know, there's some stars, right? You have your Jalen Brunson having a great season. He's a great player. Tyrese Maxey, great, right? There's guys who can do it. But below, like the thresholds are just so high. We're going to talk about guys. I don't know if our next pod, I think I want to be big. We'll talk about that later. But, you know, eventually we're going to do guards who sort of all profile as, you know, potential backup guards with, you know, maybe an outside slash starting or whatever. The threshold is just so high. I mean, we've seen guys who were better guard prospects than London Johnson fall out of the league in no time. You know, Killian Hayes already out of the league, right? And maybe if Killian Hayes was actually like the 50th pick, he'd still be hanging around in the league or whatever, or like the 35th pick or whatever. Like, I have no idea where I haven't read a single mock draft. I have no idea where London Johnson is being projected. I feel like I haven't seen anyone on Twitter talk about him ever. So it makes me feel like he's a projected, like, undrafted guy. And that's probably where I'd have him. I do think there is a real world where he can be a backup guard, and a solid backup guard. But you look at so many of what makes backup guards effective across the league. It's not actually pick and roll playmaking. It's not being able to run a steady offense. Some, the best backup guards, sure, TJ McConnell maybe, but for a lot of the backup guards in the league, it's, can you play off the ball? Can you make shots? Can you defend at a high level? That's not London Johnson. London Johnson has to reach that threshold of the TJ McConnell, of the, you know, what I hoped so long for, like a Malachi Flynn or whatever, where it's like, hey, you have to be a high level pick and roll creator. And you have to be able to do it in 13 to 15 minutes a night, where you can keep this offense respectable while Tyrese Haliburton sits his ass on the bench and drinks Gatorade, you know, versus think of how many teams, instead of doing that, stagger a Kawhi Leonard and a Paul George and a James Harden, and they just need a point guard who's just going to get the work done, can just not get blown by, can take the point of attack assignment and can bring the ball up and give it to James Harden and then get out the fucking way. That point guard archetype, while I think is potentially lower upside, is more likely to stick. And for me, that's why I have I've renamed my tiers, because I'm not going to do as many guys this year. I have London Johnson in what I'm calling fringe but interesting, which is, hey, I probably wouldn't give this guy a two-way, at least not a for sure two-way, but I definitely invite him to my summer league team and then maybe invite him to my camp. And then if he really performs, I'd give him a two-way. That's what I'm calling that tier. And that's where I'd have London Johnson. If he really performs, then yeah, you know. But is he like a better prospect than Saben Lee was? You know, Saben Lee's barely hanging around the league, right? Is he a better prospect than Malachi Flynn was? Absolutely not. Now, Malachi Flynn had a 50-burger this season. But I don't think anyone's, you know, banging down his door to sign him to a contract, right? Like, is he a better – I'm trying to think of other guards who have just completely fallen out of the league, but my brain is falling apart. But, you know, I don't think he's better than a lot of them, just straight up. And that's not to say there's not a path, because I do like the athleticism, but it's just – it's a hard road. So, sorry, that was super long-winded. Coop, Stone, where do you guys have London Johnson?
I have him – I have him 19th on my board, which – is is I would probably, which is priority two-way in this class, which is pretty absurd. But yeah, that's where I'm at with him. I think just for a couple quick stats, a couple more stats to throw at you, 35%. The biggest aspect of his offense was as a pick and roll ball handler, which was 35% of his offensive possessions. And he ranked in the 26th percentile in that. So when you're in the 26th percentile of doing what your primary skill set is, that's not necessarily great. And he's also shot 41% on layups, which is not good at all. So I like the flashes with him. They're really intriguing. For as creative as he is, I think he actually is pretty creative with the ball. I feel like it's just that, as Cooper talked about, actually, I think the timing is not there, and that hinders a lot of the and mitigates a lot of what he can do as a creative. So, yeah, I liked London more last year than I do this year because I don't think he took a consistent enough jump for me to really buy into him like I thought I would. I thought I'd be much higher at him at this point than I currently am. So I have him 19th, but so far in this class, that's like my two-way type tier, which is not good if you're drafting two-way guys at pick 19.
I'm going to be honest. I might have London lower than Bubba Carr. So
I don't hate it. I mean, that's, if you're going to take a bet,
I hate that.
Here's my thing is once you get outside of the range where I'm like, oh yeah, I want this guy in UDFA, this is all vibes. Once it's summer league invites, this is entirely vibes. And I like London Johnson. I love his game. The vibes, Bubba Carr vibes are elite. London Johnson, you know, they're good, but they're not there. So this is a personal taste thing, and I will 100% admit it, but neither of them are NBA guys to me. Both I would maybe bring to summer league, but just it, you know, not my cup of tea.
Nothing but respect. All right. I think that's plenty on, this year's draft crop. Obviously, not super excited, but let's talk a little bit about the death of the G League Ignite and some of the guys they've produced. So I just quickly want to talk about, I'm just going to run through the guys who've been drafted out of the G League Ignite, and we're just going to talk a little bit about where they're at, how we feel about them, and all that type of stuff. So the inaugural season of the G League Ignite, Jalen Green, Jonathan Kuminga, Isaiah Todd, all drafted. Jalen Green, pick 2. Jonathan Kuminga, pick 7. Isaiah Todd, pick 31. Daishon Nix was also a big part of that class. He decommitted from UCLA to do it. He was sort of the first big, like, oh, this guy decommitted from a school to go to the G League Ignite. You know, Isaiah Todd kind of did too, but Isaiah Todd had fallen out of favor a little bit. But Daishon Nix, you know, was on the rise. The best player Alaska had seen since Carlos Boozer, you know, all this stuff. And you know, he ends up going undrafted. The next class, Dyson Daniels at 8, Marjon Beauchamp at 24, Jaden Hardy at 37, Michael Fosta Jr. goes undrafted. Last year, Scoot Henderson, Leonard Miller, Sidy Sissoko, Mojave King, all drafted. Only Scoot in the first round. Mojave King almost feels like he gets drafted as a favor at 47. Sidy Sissoko, maybe a real pick, maybe a, hey, this guy played on FIBA U19 with Victor Wembanyama, so let's draft him. Who's to say? This year, again, we've talked about some of these guys, but quickly, Ron Holland, Matas Buzelis, both guys, top one and two guy in the class, number one and number two. That's big time, right? Tyler Smith is, you know, sort of an underrated but fairly real pickup, right? Like out of the OTE, it just feels like nothing has ever worked for the G League Ignite. No, other than Jalen Green, maybe you could argue Jonathan Kuminga. I'm not sure anyone's draft stock has ever been helped by going to the G League Ignite. since that first season, maybe you could argue. I mean, Dyson Daniels going 8, you know, pretty good, right? Was that because he went to the G League Ignite? You know, I think it's hard to say. But there are multiple instances of if guys had just entered the draft out of high school, they would have went higher. Ron Holland and Matas Buzelis, I think, are both the case. Again, I haven't paid too much attention to mock drafts, but they're definitely not being talked about as 1 and 2. I know for a fact that someone had like Dalton Connect above both of them in a mock draft, like going at 3 or something. Like, that's not being helped by the G League Ignite. Jaden Hardy, major fall off from where he was expected to be to where he ended up. Now, I will say Marjon Beauchamp probably really helped by the G League Ignite. I would say City Soko wasn't helped by the G League Ignite. Scoot Henderson probably wasn't helped by the G League Ignite because he was the consensus number 2 guy forever, and then he gets dunked by Brandon Miller. Leonard Miller, I would say, probably wasn't helped by the G League Ignite. So I just want to get your guys' overall thoughts on the G League Ignite experiment, whether you feel like it was worthwhile. If you want to tell me what went wrong, just give me your, you know, brief post-mortem on the G League.
I absolutely believe it was worthwhile. Absolutely. And I don't think how it ended has any impact on how I view that. The biggest reason for that is, one, I think it's great for the NBA to provide or do their best to try and provide development opportunities for young basketball players. I think maybe part of it is just like my own life. Like, I think that as someone that didn't go to college and didn't feel that was the right move for me, I think that having alternatives that help you in your profession is something that's really important to me. And I think that being able to do that and offer something other than foreign leagues, professional leagues, was something that was really cool. I thought that overall, it's just a great idea, even if it didn't work out. I think that the foundation of the idea is really something that I think was great. That said, I think it was ambitious in the way they tried to lay it out. Making a bunch of really good high school players your foundation and your building blocks of a team all together, I think, against guys that are just have been professionals for multiple years, is probably going to end up rough a lot of the time, even if you're a really good high school player. I mean, that's not to say that, you know, that who they're going up against is great, but it's more to show the distinction of, if you've been a professional basketball player for a long time, you're really, really good at basketball. And if you're a high school player, you will get there a lot of the times eventually, and more of the top end picks sooner rather than later. But a lot of the time it's going to take time to build that and develop that, and doing that with other guys that are in the same exact boat as you, I think, is a really tough ask that probably, including by myself, got overlooked in how they did that. So yeah, overall, I think great idea, just not executed properly.
Yeah, I think their philosophy with the idea of, let's bring these guys in, get them proper development in a way that prepares them for the NBA, is great. This overarching philosophy is what really appealed to me. I remember when they first dropped the idea, it was like the coolest thing ever. I was so excited for this. And I think when it was originally announced, they weren't even supposed to compete against other G League teams. It was just like, it was basically a prep team, if I'm remembering correctly. It was just
like exhibition games, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know if that would have been better, but the NBA's big problem with this was that they didn't use this as an opportunity to actually introduce NBA style development to these kids. Yes, they were teaching them NBA skills and putting them with NBA vets, but no matter who you get, these guys are just not going to be as good as 25-year-olds, especially because they're getting guys right out of high school, unless you're getting, you know, the Paolos and the Victor Wembanyamas of the world. Like, these guys are not going to completely destroy, you know, 95%, probably more than that, but like just most, a vast majority of teenagers are not better than 25-year-olds. You know, we can talk about them as prospects and what they project to do and all this stuff. But that cold, hard fact, I think, is basically what kind of killed the idea, because it should have been that this is a development year where you come in and you play a role as a teenager with NBA level vets. And the first year they had the most NBA level vets. They had Jarrett Jack. They had Donta Hall. They had guys who had played in the NBA for a long time and really committed to this. And, you know, I don't want to talk shit about John Jenkins, but he is no Jarrett Jack, you know, and it should have been that these guys are cogs in the machine and they play next to stars or G League level star players, and they learn to play a role and they learn how to fit into an NBA style offense, and you teach them NBA style defense. You don't just lean into, this is what the G League's good at. Go get more athletes, make them run as fast as they can, and just like let them do their thing and they'll figure it out. Because I think that's something that I've also seen as, you know, a scout is development wise. Yes, minutes are great, but if they're not quality minutes, it's not the same. You know, you're not going to get development just because you played 2000 minutes in a season. If, you know, 1900 of those minutes are zero leverage, you do whatever the fuck you want. You know, you're not going to develop as well as a guy who played 500 meaningful minutes.
Which the biggest issue with the G League Ignite in general is a structural issue with the G League. And listen, I don't want to get into the labor theory of rights here, all right? That's my speech on being pro-union I will save. But the biggest issue with the G League, and the reason the NBA doesn't trust the G League as a development system, is because it's not being treated like proper minor league. You can say what you want. If you go to a minor league baseball game, and listen, people don't like baseball, whatever. I don't care. I enjoy baseball because it's the only sport where you can sit, have a beer and a hot dog and not feel like you're missing anything. It's my relaxing sport, all right. And like, it's competitive. They want to win. And like, some of that is because it's lower input, right? Like, the truth is, on baseball, you don't have to, even as a player, you don't have to be locked in every second you're on the floor like you do in basketball. You can relax, you can take breaths, you can do all this stuff. That's harder in basketball. And when you feel like there's no stakes, it's hard. Even guys who want to play really hard, it's hard to do that for 38 minutes a night if you just feel like it doesn't matter. The G League needs structural incentives for winning, probably pay-based, right? They need to focus more on building it as its own thing, trying to get people in the stands. And they need to focus more on the players and getting guys to stay in the G League for longer as more than just they're desperate to stay in the U.S. as a real investment by an NBA team. It's just not there right now. It needs to get there. And I think the G League Ignite, in a world where the G League itself was good, could work. And it could work really well. But it's just not there right now because the G League as a product isn't there right now. It's not enjoyable basketball to watch. I think the biggest reason it hurts guys is because like their draft stock is because, you know, I talked about this a little bit, but NBA staffs know this too. I've talked with multiple NBA scouts. It's a bad scouting context. It's hard to get a feel for who these guys are past the base of, well, they took this many shots and they kind of built, you know, and they're clearly athletic or not athletic or whatever, but because they're not playing real defense, they're not playing against real defense. It's hard to get any feel for anything. So it's just that's what really hurts guys, especially the margin guys, you know, especially the Mojave Kings and the Leonard Millers and the guys who aren't the clear stars of the team. It hurts them a lot because of that. So that's very long-winded. Just a way to say the G League Ignite was a great idea and I want it to stick around in theory, but it's just not there yet. And that's going to take a real structural focus from the NBA, but they're probably too focused on their next Bet Online partnership or whatever to actually, you know, fix the problem at hand. So anyways, that's all we got. You guys tell me, we'll talk about this live on air. This is some inside baseball. I kind of want to talk about bigs next. I want to talk about De'Ron Holmes and Donovan Clingan and whoever else Coop has on the list with that group. I think we had guards listed next, but Coop Stone, are you guys good to talk about bigs next?
I am good with whoever.
So do we want to move Holmes from like – so, okay.
I want to talk about Holmes and Clingan together, no matter what. Like that's
Holmes like, and Clingan, and then we can either do Edie or Flip. Or
let's do both. Edie.
Let's just do the massive players, guys who are like acting like.
I mean, we could do both. I mean, if you Flip, I feel like does have more forward equity, so we can.
Yeah, and then that then
these
we
are
can
three
do Flip.
Centers.
They're okay, centers. Let's do Flip, Missy, and Iguodaro in like because they're kind of smaller.
Yeah.
And so we'll do bigs and small bigs. That'll be our.
Okay. Big. So the next pod, the next pod. I'm not going to spoil who it is. But the next pod, we will be talking about the player who I think I'm going to end up with having number one on my board.
So Clingan, because there's no way.
I'm not going to spoil it.
Evil.
What if I said it wasn't a white guy?
Clingan, Edie, and who?
If you put Edie one on your board after the fucking text conversations we had.
Okay. Okay.
I respect it.
I'm trying not to spoil it, but I feel like it's gonna be pretty obvious once we get there, and like you guys are making because like I'm now realizing that I don't want it to be in other people's head, like who it's not. But I guess I'll leave it in suspense. But
what happened to Bryce? When did this become like about, the surprise podcast?
I think we're gonna be talking about my number.
Oh my gosh, it's gonna be De'Ron.
But anyways, we'll get there when we get there. We appreciate you all for listening. Somehow we went 122 minutes or an hour and 22 minutes, excuse me, on Tyler Smith, Babacar Sané, and London Johnson.
I could have talked for this long on Babacar all by myself.
Honestly, I had more notes too.
So this has been the Upside Swings NBA Draft Podcast. For Coop at Ali underscore Oop underscore Coop, for Stone at Report underscore Court, I'm at Bryce Cedric 14. Please give us a like, rating, review. Our last go pods did good. This one I have a feeling is going to do not as good. So
just wait for part three G League next week.
Give us some good vibes. We will not be talking about John Jenkins next week as much as Stone wants to. But this has been the Upside Swings NBA Draft Podcast. We hope we hit our ceiling. Thank you.